Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 267.
This week on the podcast, tomorrow is Election Day. Elections.
And Donna Brazile's explosive new book details the shocking revelations that literally every Sanders supporter knew just from being alive.
Plus, the GOP tax bill proves that the only group more important to the GOP than the top 1% is the unborn.
And climate change is real. Donald Trump said so.
Plus, new attacks between W and Trump in the ongoing race to be the second worst president.
And Rand Paul thwarts the first real Bowling Green massacre with his ribs.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You know who you can't find on the web? Puerto Rican people, because they don't have power.
Like,
just
what?
Another friendly reminder that Puerto Rico is still largely without power.
Yeah, I even have this note right here in front of us that Puerto Rico has no power, and I still didn't know where you were going with that.
It's been a long week, guys. Oh, in any case, tomorrow is Election Day.
Yeah.
The Election Day, the November Election Day.
Get excited.
Get excited. More than get excited,
Vote. Right.
I was going to say, get active.
Yeah, sure. Care.
Get informed.
Yeah.
Find out who is running. We have a list of candidates that we are going to read to you in part because they are candidates that if you live in these towns, you should vote for.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, you should know that this is a group of towns in a small area of upstate New York. These are good candidates that are running for town council. A lot of them are running because they feel that, you know, even at the local level, they're seeing that, you know, they want to sort of take back their communities. They want to sort of shepherd their communities in a new direction. And so we're going to read you their names.
And you know what?
We're going to encourage you to find out who's running on your town council.
That's the thing. You know what? You might not care about any of these people. You
doesn't
also
matter.
Might.
Right.
But you know what? If you don't, let this list be the thing that makes you think to yourself, hey, I probably have a town council race that I could vote in tomorrow.
Exactly. Here they are. Trish Tyrell is running for the town council in Franklin, New York.
Yeah.
These are all towns in Delaware County in upstate New York. This is a district that is a swing district that is represented by a Republican that could be represented by a Democrat an upcoming congressional election if people could get themselves organized, and they are trying. There's Kathleen Hayek for the town council of Walton. She's actually great. I've met her before.
Nice.
There's Rachel Pollins in the town council of Meredith.
Sure.
There's Janet Tweed running for town council in Delhi.
Not Delhi. Which is what I said earlier.
Delhi, county seat of Delaware County.
Oh.
Who knew?
Oh, sure.
Marge Miller, who's running for supervisor in Middletown. And Julia Reichel, who's running for the Middletown Town Council as well.
Yeah.
These are all, some of these are very tiny towns,
sure.
Franklin especially. And these are all towns that see, that you need to have a good town council in, because even if you live in a tiny, tiny town where you don't think much happens, the few things that do happen are often determined by who's on the town council.
So true. And you know what? If you noticed a theme there with all of those names.
They're all women.
They were all women. So
slow clap to
good work,
Delaware County.
Ladies,
for
bring it.
God, specifically because these are all in a region where the economy has been quite depressed, and these are agricultural areas for the most part, but areas where agriculture has not been bringing in the money it used to. They've had big battles in these areas over fracking, over pipelines, things like that. It is like one of the things that we have noticed recently, because this is the region that my parents live in, this is why I know so much about it, is that a lot of these town councils are 100% farmers, which used to represent the largest share of the economy.
Sure.
But most people in these towns don't work in agriculture anymore.
Yeah.
Most of them work in healthcare or in other fields like that.
Yeah.
And so there has been a large change in the makeup, the economic makeup of these towns, and the town council hasn't been reflecting that. And that's something that people who, you know, a lot of these women and other people in similar towns have been noticing, and that's why you're suddenly seeing a large interest in running people in town council races.
Yeah.
A lot of people run unopposed in those races, so they don't have to do that.
No.
Like, it is always a good idea to have an election.
For sure. Yes.
Like, this town council in Franklin, this town council race in Franklin, they've had to, these people who've been sitting in the seat for decades with not much going on, they had to campaign this year.
Oh.
They sent out a campaign letter.
Yeah.
So,
well, that happens on these town councils a lot, is you get these people who just sort of like are permanent fixtures on them, and it's only just because nobody thinks to themselves that they could run against that person.
So if you don't have a, you know, you don't have a congressional race going on, so don't worry about that. The president, unfortunately, there's no race going on there.
Tomorrow.
Can't vote him
it's
out.
Sad.
if you're in Virginia, you may have a governor's race. But even if you don't have a governor's race, you should make sure that you don't have a local election that you didn't realize you had.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Speaking of the Virginia governor's race,
you know, the Democrats may eke it out, but it's not through any of the new things that they've been trying to woo rural voters in Virginia, which should be scaring all of us because that is the thing that we are supposedly trying to do around the country. And they have made a huge push of it in this Virginia's race. The Democratic candidate
Ralph Northam.
Ralph Northam is from rural Virginia. He's had multiple commercials out, like talking about his rural roots and how he's not going to forget rural people if he becomes the governor. And he's polling about the same in all of his internal polling as Hillary Clinton did.
Right.
And
who
worse,
didn't say a damn
and
thing
worse
to those
than
voters.
All Obama, Kerry, and Gore did in previous elections.
Other people who weren't really trying to talk to the rural voters in Virginia. This pisses me off for two reasons.
Yeah.
One of which is, if we're going to commit to that strategy, we should be good at it.
Well, I know.
The second, though, is that if we, you know, he's still looking like he's leading in the polls.
Yeah.
And that's because Northern Virginia can carry the election.
Right. And if he's, if he polls the same as Hillary Clinton did, then he will win because she won. And,
exactly. But if he is going to win because of Northern Virginia, and is not going to resonate in the parts of Virginia that he's supposedly been designed to resonate in, could they not have found a candidate more representative of Northern Virginia to put in there, slash a candidate who's like slightly farther to the left than this guy?
Right. Well, this is not the Bernie Sanders candidate because we've talked on this podcast about how Sanders endorsed and it wasn't Northam.
No, exactly.
So, yes, they probably could have found somebody further to the left.
Just me thinking aloud. Yes. Just me thinking a little to myself.
Yeah.
I think that the issue beyond us just like not knowing how to appeal to rural voters is that we are not considering where rural voters and non-rural voters voters align. I think you can get votes in rural areas by talking about a lot of policies that seem like they would be too progressive. Like, you know, you can sell single-payer healthcare to rural areas.
We saw it get sold to a room full of coal miners in West Virginia. So
like, you can sell these policies to rural Americans. A lot of rural Americans voted for Trump on very populist lines.
Right.
There is room to sell them ideas that were being put forth by Sanders.
Yes.
You know, when you talk about like free trade, very unpopular in rural America or and in Rust Belt America.
Yeah, you can sell them on progressive economic issues.
Sell them on progressive economic issues.
Yeah.
This is not what this guy's doing, though.
No.
He's selling them on centrist issues, being like, see, I'm not too crazy for
and
you.
And having a southern drawl. Like, maybe rural voters are smarter than we thought they were and just are not going to vote for the guy who like happens to be from there and talks like that.
Exactly. People like
they voted for a guy from New York.
Exactly. I was going to say there's an identity politics side to any election, but it's always more important that the candidates actually offer something.
Yes.
And when you're trying to offer something to everyone, you're often not offering anything. So
that's right.
I feel like when you move to the center, you stop seeming like you're offering anything. Like, if these guys are willing to vote for some blowhard from New York because he was seemingly offering them something, then they're willing to vote for literally anybody who tells them they can have things.
Right, exactly. Yes. And it should be the Democrat who's doing that.
And it should be
the
Democrat who's doing that.
Right.
Because we're the ones who actually think that that policy is worthwhile.
Right, exactly. Yes.
But maybe part of the issue is that the DNC is in total shambles and now has a new... There's a new drama as of this week that you probably heard about.
Good drama.
It's juicy, you guys.
And
it
you know
really
what?
Juicy.
I never thought... If you would have told me a while ago that Donna Brazile was writing a memoir about her brief time as interim chair of the DNC...
I would have told you to get the fuck out of here.
That's right. That's exactly what I would have done. I would have come up with the most dramatic eye roll that I could have mustered in the moment.
Yeah,
and
I told you to walk right up on out of here.
But this fucker is out on Tuesday, and...
I'm going to read every word of it. Here's... The thing that I think is so funny about it is it's written like a YA novel. Like, it's so juicy because... So the reason that it got... That it blew up was because she published an excerpt from it
in
Politico. And
the
excerpt talks about how the DNC primary was just, like, openly rigged.
Right. It was basically... The entire DNC was being run by
the Clinton campaign
due to an agreement that she had wherein she could do so.
Exactly. So she published this excerpt and... The excerpt is good reading in part because it reads like a YA novel, so it's like really dramatic.
Yeah.
I know that she's trying to sell a book, but I also wonder, because so much of it is her trying to distance herself from this scandal, I wonder to what degree at some point some real shit's going to break where there's going to be a scandal that actually takes people down over this, because I was surprised by the degree to which she was like, I know that in politics you always want to be like, no, it wasn't me, it was these other, you know, like, right, I know exactly. You don't want to take credit for scandal.
Yeah.
But I thought the way that she framed this was so like sort of running scaredish.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So kind of like aggressively insisting that it was not her idea. And listen, this is the thing. Donna Brazile has been sort of like a fixture at the DNC for decades.
Yeah.
Everything
she's worked for the Clintons.
Exactly.
Lest we forget, this is the same Donna Brazile who resigned from CNN because she gave Hillary Clinton the debate questions prior to the debate.
Exactly. So we're not talking about somebody who doesn't have centrist DNC politics on the brain.
Right.
She's all in for that.
Yeah.
But I just like, I wonder to what degree, because as someone who has been a fixture in the DNC this whole time, she, I'm sure, feels very guilty about the fact that she wasn't able to do anything to stop this and didn't do anything to stop this or didn't know about it in time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But like, she's one of the few people who was in a position to find out about this and stop this or to suspect it was going on and stop this. And she never did. This is not the first time, I'm sure,
that the
Clintons have been meddling in DNC affairs.
Yeah. Well, and the main reason that this sort of agreement kicked off in the first place was because, what's that?
Because
they were broke.
Yeah.
I would guess that there is no way that people didn't know that the DNC was broke, especially Donna Brazile.
Like,
so, I mean, yes, she may have been shocked to learn that it was the Clintons that were funding it, but it shouldn't have actually really been that shocking that it was. Also, Politico reported 2 years ago that on this sort of joint fundraising thing that Hillary was up to with the DNC, which was all part of this deal that sort of allowed her to, because she was basically like going to fund it. But this joint fundraising deal, she was not really following herself anyway, because basically what it was doing was like, you know, she was supposed to be giving money back to the state parties like that were like, and she wasn't.
She wasn't
like, it was
that.
Like getting funneled into like her own campaign.
So she
like
was she was giving them money to give herself.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's all... I don't know.
It got used as a way for the Clinton campaign to raise big money that violated the, there's a ban on, or there's a limit to how much money donors can give. This was a way for donors to get around that ban. So big donors were able to donate directly to state parties. And then that money got funneled back up to the big party. And that money got funneled into pro-Clinton, efforts and stuff like that. It also, though, gave the Clinton campaign some say in who the DNC hired, especially for their communications team and things like that. I mean, Donna Brazile, in this YA novel that she's writing, talks a little bit about that. But her, like, it's such a melodramatic read.
It totally is.
Where she goes on about, knew that I was going to have to call Bernie. I promised him I'd look into this.
It was the phone call
like,
that I'd ever made.
Come on.
Yeah.
But in any case, it is gratifying to see a sort of Clintonite DNC official admit that this was going on.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because it's too late.
Right.
And now Liz Warren has like come out and said that it was rigged.
Yeah.
And obviously most Sanders supporters sort of felt this during the primary because it was like so obvious that it was happening. But somehow this didn't end up being like the craziest story she told this week, because after she published this Politico piece, she seemed to go on like a tear of like trying to tease her novel.
Yeah. Well, actually, a lot of these things are from the Washington Post and apparently they have a copy.
Oh, they do.
Yes.
So she wrote this
initial Politico piece, and then I'm sure all of Washington was like,
we're going to find
get that fucking book?
Yeah. We will find this novel.
And she probably gave it to them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. But so she talks about a lot of dysfunction at the Democratic Party. She talked about that she was in some secret deliberations to see if she could replace Clinton and Kaine on the ticket.
Yes, because apparently it was within her power to do so at the time, because it was after... it was after Hillary collapsed. And apparently if there's sort of is like, if a candidate is like unfit, or I don't know what the exact wording was, but basically she's sort of like, and she talks about like coming up with all these different combinations of people, and like, she
settled on Biden and Cory Booker.
They would have won.
I mean, they probably would have. My feeling about this though, because she says she didn't do it, because she said, I thought of Hillary and all the women in the country who were so proud of her and excited about her. I could not do this to them. She could have put another woman on the ticket.
Yeah.
Liz Warren was out there trying to win the election.
And also, if a man was going to win, then I would contend that while that would have sucked for the women who were voting for Hillary Clinton because only she was a woman, their lives would be much better off now than they would be currently under the Trump administration that we have.
I don't buy that there were no women options that could have won.
Also,
I have thought for a long time that there were plenty of women options.
Also, like, if you're getting to this point, like... the answer is fucking Bernie Sanders.
It's like yes.
Right? Hello. Like the person hello. Who like ran a close primary against her that was ahead of Trump in literally every poll that was yes. ever taken since the beginning of time. Like it's, she didn't have to think of every combination of two human right. beings on earth.
Exactly. But it wasn't that hard. She did because she's a Clintonite. That's what's so fascinating about this yeah. whole story.
Yeah, she had to triangulate until she was blue in the
until
face.
Until she couldn't figure out what her opinion was anymore. She's very critical in the book of the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
She considers it sort of well-intentioned, but yeah, kind of blundering.
Yeah, she said that they had stiff and stupid messages.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. And but she also said that the Brooklyn headquarters felt like a sterile hospital ward where, quote, someone had died. She had disagreements with Clinton staffers. At one yeah. point on a conference call, she told three senior campaign officials that she was being treated like a slave.
Yeah, and she said, I'm not Patsy the Slave, referring to Lupita Nyong'o's character in 12 Years a Slave. She said, y'all keep whipping me, and you never give me any money or any way to do my damn job. I'm not going to be your whipping girl. Yeesh. Guys.
A lot of Clinton campaign yeah. staffers disputed some of those details, but yeah. I would also contend that I'm here for the drama, so I'm willing to believe any of it.
And then, this is fucking rich, by the way, because a bunch of Clinton campaign officials, like, wrote a letter, like a, you know, strongly worded, like, right. denunciation of this. And here's what they said. They disparaged her memoir as an effort to sell books. Sure.
Well,
it is.
It's a memoir. She's yeah, trying to sell books.
Right. She wrote a book that she would like to sell. Right. Like, she's got a book deal. Like, she's probably supposed to be selling some of these yeah. fuckers. Anyway, but the thing that annoys the shit out of me is that it was an effort to sell books, which is stupid, but also an effort, they said, to manufacture drama. And I'm curious whether they wrote their former boss a similar email right? when she released What Happened, because that was coming from the actual candidate and was way fucking worse, by the way.
That's, I mean, obviously all Washington is just filled with various attempts to create drama and then accuse other people of creating drama. Right. Like,
and
that's what all of Washington
is. For a book.
Right. But I feel like my favorite thing is that they are discouraging, they're disparaging her for trying to sell books.
Yeah, how dare you try to sell this
like,
book
that
you wrote.
I wrote a really yeah. juicy novel, a juicy yeah. memoir, and now I want to sell it.
Yeah.
She but also...
This is real...
There's
she,
like some conspiracy theory elements.
I was going to say, like, part of me is just sort of like here for the insanity of all of this.
I'm here
and then
for it.
And then part of me is just sort of like, should Donna Brazile be, like,
committed?
Seeking mental help?
Yeah.
I'm just not sure because, like... Yeah, this is...
Yeah, she,
go ahead.
So she she also writes in this book that she is still haunted by the still unsolved murder of a data staffer at the DNC, Seth Rich, and started fearing for her own life, doing things like shutting the blinds in her office so snipers couldn't see her and installing surveillance cameras at her home.
Yeah.
Who's crazy
wow.
in this situation?
I don't,
is it
right?
her or is it them? Like, I
know.
I want to know who yeah. was being too crazy because
yeah.
if any of those fears were valid, the DNC had lost their
yeah.
fucking mind. But... Also, this sounds like the rantings of a crazy conspiracy theorist.
It does. This is going to really blow up my Facebook feed this week, by
oh my
the
God,
way.
I know.
This particular portion of the story, because this is a real favorite, like, in the dark corners of the Bernie web.
Oh,
which,
I'm
of
sure.
which I am at least sort of related
of
to. Yeah.
I...
And they have really been, are quite certain that the DNC, maybe the FBI, maybe some sort of dark... Who knows? But somebody in high places killed Seth Rich. And the Facebook people know it. So if Donna Brazile is writing that she
is
still haunted by it,
and
that she's got her... had to get security going for herself, like, it's not going to be good for those
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I was... excited when this story started to break because so many Bernie people came out of the woodwork on Facebook, where
yeah.
my wall is normally filled with very radical people who don't mess with party politics. And then
yeah.
Like angry Hillary people who are still ranting at Bernie
yeah.
people about how they ruined everything.
I know.
And this was the first week that I saw some people be like, I'm just going to leave this story here.
Yeah.
You guys discuss.
Yeah.
Like some Bernie people started to work their
right?
way out of the woodwork. But now this second half of the story
yeah.
where everything is insane, I feel like is going to ruin the fun.
Yeah. And here's another thing that I feel like has not been pointed out by enough people is that I don't remember exactly when it was that she called Bernie here, but
it was right before the election, I think.
I think it was right before the
yeah.
election. But the fact that he himself has not said anything about this call, the fact that he up until the very last breath of that election was trying to get people to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the man should win a fucking medal for not going around and dragging the DNC through the mud here. I mean, he did through a lot of the primary, but of late he has really been sort of like trying to be the guy to like make this all go away. Well, and the fact that he has been doing that is like he's a saint.
Have been frustrated all week because this also brought a sort of weird backlash of people that were angry with not just Bernie Sanders voters, but third parties all of a sudden were back in the limelight a little bit. I have been thinking a lot to myself recently, though, about who in this race, like who as a candidate you can accuse of being nefarious. So voters aside, there were, you know, politics is filled with nefarious people on both sides. So whatever.
Yeah.
But of the candidates, I would contend that the most earnest candidates, the people who really wanted to do, that wanted to make change in the most earnest way, were Bernie Sanders and Jill Stein. Jill Stein might make mistakes a lot of the time. Jill Stein might, you know, say, she might do attend weird things. She might accidentally, you know, kowtow to weird elements of her party, whatever.
She might have taken some help from the Russians.
She might have taken, but like, she is somebody who I think is, she's not a politician in, you know, she runs for office all the time, but she's never really served in large elected office like that. She's kind of inexperienced in that regard.
Right.
I think that she, as a person, does this, puts herself through this every 4 years because she earnestly wants to make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think Bernie Sanders earnestly wants to make a difference. Yeah. I think when he makes missteps, it's not because he's trying to be an asshole. Right. I think everyone just makes missteps sometimes, but he's sort of an earnest candidate.
Yeah.
And I am sick of people disparaging the voters of earnest candidates over the voters of candidates that we know have been, and whether or not they have to be up to shit to survive in Hollywood, and, I mean Hollywood, in Washington or Hollywood, wherever, is besides the point.
Yeah.
I'm sick of people disparaging people who tried to vote for an earnest candidate.
Right?
Who earnestly was trying to do the right thing.
We were just trying to do what was right, guys.
Yeah. I'm just sick of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Sick of it. Yeah. Sick of it. In any case. Oh, we had a mass shooting today.
Oh, yeah.
Well, today being Sunday when we're recording this, not Monday that we just referred to when we said election day is tomorrow.
Right. Guess what age and race the murderer was.
You're never going to get this, you guys.
Just one guess. We'll give you one guess.
Oh, did you guess that it was a white man in their 20s?
Nailed it.
Done.
You got it.
So it wasn't terrorism. Perfect.
No, it was not.
This was in a church in a town of like, what, 400 people or something?
A tiny town outside
San Antonio.
But by like 30 miles. So it was actually, and which I think was like the closest hospital. I think that was actually one of the problems they were having.
Yeah.
It was like trying to get people to the hospital.
Yeah, 26 people died. 20 people are injured. And the youngest person to die was 5, and the oldest person died was 72. Like, there was a huge age range, but kids died.
Kids died, The 14-year-old daughter of the pastor died. It's the worst church shooting in America that we've ever had, so I guess...
Oh, we'll have another.
We'll have another. I'm not worried. We can top that, guys. Come on.
Is it some guy who didn't live in the community? People had seen him at a gas station, but, like, no one really knew who he was.
Yeah.
The guy was found dead in Guadalupe County.
They found a bunch of other guns.
No one's really sure if he died from gunshot wounds sustained at the site or killed himself later, because apparently someone did pull a gun.
Yeah,
it's Texas, so someone was armed.
You could. I'm surprised nobody in the church was, because it's illegal to carry guns in churches in Texas.
But he somehow survived the lone civilian attempt to stop him with a gun.
Yeah. It's because there weren't any good Texas church people with guns.
That's right. Yeah, they should have. They should have all been armed. Maybe they could have killed all the children.
Right? They could have all just been shooting in all of the directions, trying to shoot the guy, and then it just would have been over.
Yeah, and he might have still just walked away and then shot himself later.
Yeah.
But so in any case, looking forward to hearing more about that, but not really.
I'm not. No, I know. I mean, it's terrible. We're sort of like being glib about it, but I mean, it's just like,
you can't,
I know. Like, what are we going to do?
So,
like, cry about it? I mean, we should, but it's like, we can't. It's like, do something about it instead of cry about
Let's do something. And you know who's not going to do anything is the legislators that represent that very state.
Correct.
Those are the people that are stopping us from doing something. Our legislators ready to do something.
They're going
to
be like, look, we passed this bill 2 years ago. Why the fuck didn't you all have guns?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, our 800-year-old California senator has been trying to lead gun control efforts in the Senate for centuries at this point.
Basically,
we're nowhere.
Yeah, millennia.
Millennia, exactly. Yeah. We also keep learning new and horrible things about the tax reform bill. Well, a lot of hidden Easter eggs in this
right,
one.
Right, I was going to say, we sort of, you know, were under the impression that it was basically only designed to, you
make
know,
the rich richer,
poor and middle class people and make the rich richer. But it's got a lot more plans than that. Yeah.
One of the things that's hidden in the language of the bill is it codifies the rights of the unborn child. And it does this in a very sneaky way.
Yeah.
So there are these things called 529 plans, which are basically tax-free investment funds that are state-sponsored that are like college funds, basically. Sure. It's like a college account that you can set up when your child is born to like save money for college.
Well, you can, in a lot of places, you can actually, or maybe it's nationwide, I don't know, you can actually already set these up
if you're,
for unborn children.
For future children.
So it's not even that they...
So they didn't need to pass this.
Yeah, it was the fact that like they've got a bill now that like refers to them as like living people, basically.
Yes, exactly.
It gives them the same rights in this tax bill. So like, you know, Susan B. Anthony group or whatever they are,
they
or whatever, like
were all
they loved it, and it's like that's one of the ways you know it's bad. But
yeah,
it's just
the
like,
definition is an unborn child means a child in utero. A child in utero means a member of the species Homo sapiens at any stage of development who is carried in the womb. That's what the provision states, just in case anyone wanted the official warning.
Yeah, they weren't gonna let any science
slip
stop by
them
right
no.
there. Yeah.
Just Homo sapiens. Only Homo sapiens though are unborn. If you want to set up a college fund for your unborn monkey.
Leave it to them. They're good at this shit, though.
No.
You know, like,
and they
congratulations also, to them for, like, getting unborn children in the tax bill.
Yeah.
I mean.
They would, if anyone could.
Yeah.
If anyone could. They are also considering trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act in this tax bill.
Oh, God.
Here's the thing. First of all, stop this.
Stop doing that.
Second of all. Do they not want to pass the tax bill?
I know.
Because as soon as they repeal Obamacare in the tax bill, it becomes the Obamacare repeal bill. It's no longer a tax bill, and it's not going to pass.
Yeah.
Like, do they want any successes at all under their belt? Because when this becomes the repealing Obamacare bill, they have the same number of votes for that they've always had. People are going to catch on.
I know, right, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And
John McCain, still in the Senate.
Still
Susan
in the
Collins,
Senate.
Still
alive.
In the,
like,
still in the
these people are still alive.
Right.
It's going to pass the House. I'm not worried about the House.
Sneaking it into a tax bill is not regular order.
Right. Susan Collins, first of all, it was already a tax bill. It was passing through reconciliation anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So if they
just
sneak it in.
Just putting it in a new tax
bill.
This
is just a different tax bill. This is the same plan that they've already tried twice and failed at.
Yeah.
How many times do they want to fail at this?
I don't know. Many more.
Many, many more.
Yes.
Yeah. This is, that plan is too wild for words.
Yeah.
I can't even with that plan.
Yeah. So, by the way, I'm going to read this comment because, like, I rarely sink into the comment sections in places because, like, they're a very dark place. But for whatever, this was a short article, so I was scrolling and I was like, oh, it's done.
We got it off Yahoo News, that's why.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's just, like, the most dumbed down news possible. But anyway, the first comment was, it says, what's hilarious is that all these young Bernie Sanders voters who think that socialism is great will immediately drop their insurance or jump for joy at no longer having to pay their Obamacare tax. Everybody paying their, quote, fair share is all well and good, just so long as it's not them.
Well,
which is like a wild misunderstanding of what's
going on. Don't
understand
what the Affordable Care Act is.
What the Affordable Care Act is, what socialism is, or what literally any single Bernie Sanders supporter stands for.
Right. Like, what a Bernie Sanders supporter is.
Their misreading of like literally everything that they're commenting on is
impressive.
Wild. So I feel like maybe I'm going to start reading the comment sections more because that one, I got a lot of entertainment out of that one.
Yeah, this is a...
Got a lot of rage out of it too.
Quite
but,
a comment.
I mean,
this is anyway. A real comment.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, so we know Trump is in Asia.
Yeah, somewhere. I think he went to Japan. He went to the lowest risk for him place first,
well,
basically.
What else is he going to do?
Right,
he's not
exactly.
going to...
Yeah.
Like, he's not like, even going to the DMZ. Why? He's not even going
to...
Like, his trip doesn't have a trip to, like, the,
oh,
the
right, yeah.
demarcation
oh, yeah.
line.
Yeah, right, yeah.
At, which is the only thing to see in South Korea.
Right,
like, nobody
right.
goes to South Korea without going
yeah,
to the
yeah,
DMZ.
Yeah. yeah.
But Donald Trump's going to.
Yeah, he's going to... Right, so he's in Japan now.
Right.
Sunday, I think, was
right.
in Japan. He's like, I can't fuck Japan up.
He's going to meet with Putin
at yeah.
some point.
Huh?
I don't know. Whatever. He might come home, though, to some more of his friends being
right.
indicted.
Some other people who have met with Putin.
Yes.
Right. Might be in jail when he gets home.
When he gets home.
Yeah.
It's sounding like we are close to bringing charges against Mike Flynn.
Yeah, it could be happening while you're listening to this because apparently Monday is when we're doing
when we
these.
Do charges.
yeah.
So, and also Mike Flynn's son.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah.
Unexpected curveball that I'm... Why not?
Right.
Take down
we
the whole
knew,
Flynn family.
You know, we knew that
yeah, we
Flynn
knew.
Was...
Flynn was on the chopping block.
Right, exactly.
The thing that's
he was really one of the first people...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's notable because Flynn actually served in the cabinet and was not a campaign official.
Right.
So this is somebody who has served in federal government and was doing secret dealings with the Russians.
Right.
That connects the Trump administration and not just the Trump campaign.
Trump has sort of tried to distance himself from Manafort and the other three who were charged this last week, which is,
Papadopoulos
and sort of ridiculous just because, like, hello, the guy ran your campaign. But, like, he's like, he can, yes, say with definitiveness that Paul Manafort did not serve in this administration.
Right.
He cannot say that about Michael Flynn.
Michael Flynn was not only served in this administration, but was brought down by these very concerns.
Yeah. But I can't wait for all of the lock him up memes since he's the real purveyor of the lock her up.
The lock her up.
Yeah.
I know. It's going to be so satisfying.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real...
Oh, boy.
Also, Carter Page is still hitting the news stands.
By the way, Carter Page... is a fucking joke.
Yes.
Like, this is a thing. Like, his story is so crazy. Like, he was...
Another foreign policy advisor of the Trump campaign, and a campaign that had multiple foreign policy advisors who had no foreign policy experience and were busy talking to Russia under the table.
Yeah, and that is, like, Carter Page is one of the people who, like, got people, like, being like, hey... Who is this guy that is only known for, like, having lived in Russia and, like, having business dealings with an investment banker, like, as part of the firm that he started? And, like, also, like, being... He was involved in some, like, 2013 FBI investigation between, like, him and some Russians.
Yeah.
So, like, then he's, like, all of a sudden is now a campaign foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign. Meanwhile... The entire foreign policy community in Washington is like, who the fuck is Carter Page?
Yeah.
And so he goes over and he gives a speech.
In Russia.
In Russia. And then, apparently met with a bunch of Russians there, but like has always claimed that he didn't.
Right.
He was just there giving some scholarly speech.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's all that he was up to. And everybody was like, hey, wait a minute. Like,
a, who are you?
Who are you?
Why is your speech important?
Right. And oh, look, you're only a person who has dealt with shady Russians in the past.
Yeah. But the fact that he kept lying about that.
He's lied in the press. He's been lying up a storm about meeting with Russians.
He lied to the FBI about it. Yeah. He's lied to the press about it. He's lied to everyone about it. And now we have new details of the trip, and it turns out he was lying.
Right. Yeah, because he was being questioned by Adam Schiff this week because, we know that Mueller's investigation is going on, but so is the House Intelligence
Investigation
Committees.
Yeah.
And, there's 100 different committees that are investigating this. And so they apparently presented him with an email that he had written to a bunch of Trump officials outlining all of the information that he got while he was on his Russia trip. And they were like, hey, is that yours? And then he was like, oh, yeah. Oops.
I might have met.
I forgot about all of that stuff until right now.
Met with a ton of Russian government officials while I was in Russia.
Amazing.
Oh, Carter Page.
If you've ever seen this guy, by the way, like an interview with him, he's a dolt. Like,
joke squad. Like,
total.
Like, nonsense person.
Yeah, there's no way that he could be a foreign policy advisor because, like, there's no way that he can, like, process complex thoughts about foreign policy.
That's, though, the thought that I also had about George Papadopoulos for a completely different reason. Just, like, his face looks like the face of someone who only thinks glib thoughts. And I felt like that made me think maybe he didn't understand complex foreign policy situations.
Sure. Well, he didn't.
I mean, he understood.
None of these people did.
No. Well, and also, his area of expertise was not in Eastern Europe. It was in the Mediterranean region.
Sure. Yeah.
So, whatever. In any case, the Trump administration accidentally endorsed climate change, the idea of climate change, that they believe in it. Basically, what happened was there.
This is so weird.
There is, every 4 years, there's a report known as the National Climate Assessment that is mandated, it's congressionally mandated, that it's like a big science report about climate change.
Yeah.
And 13 federal agencies work on it.
Yep.
And this week, they unveiled their report.
Yeah. But it had to be approved to go out by the White
House. Administration had to approve it to go out. The report says that humans are the dominant cause of global temperature rise and that this is the warmest period in the history of civilization.
Yeah.
So it basically says exactly what climate change people, purveyors, claim is the case, and exactly the opposite of what climate change deniers like the Trump administration believe.
Right.
Yeah. They say
this report did not say...
It didn't mince words.
It didn't mince words, and it also didn't say that global warming is a thing that China made up.
Exactly.
So...
Yeah, it says it's unambiguous. there is no convincing alternative explanation. It says that, and that it says that it's there's no reason to believe that anything other than humans created it and are to
blame.
The
cars we drive, the power plants we operate, the forests we destroy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then, you know, the White House just clicked send on that sucker, sent it right out
to us. Hilariously, they just didn't want to have a big fight about this because they're trying to get this tax bill.
Yeah. Because like, it has the
they're
person
so
who,
obsessed with passing this tax bill, which is garbage.
Who approves this is Gary Cohen, who's the director of the National Economic
Council.
Who is
one of the, you know, the Democrats.
Right.
If you're
he
Steve
believes
Bannon.
In climate change. Right. Uh-huh. And but basically, they just thought, well, we'll just push this out because we don't want to take the focus off tax reform. And instead, they created a huge distraction.
Right.
Oh,
God.
But then
they also the Trump administration said. Or no, not the administration, but a lot of conservative groups have been mad at the administration for actually like letting this get out, and then they blamed the
Obama
that
scientists
that it was all a bunch of holdovers from the Obama era, and it's like scientists are not having certain opinions based on whether Barack Obama or Donald Trump is the president.
Wait,
or
their
not.
Love like, of Obama doesn't blind them to the realities of climate change or not?
No, that's not. That's not part of the scientific process, who the president is.
Exactly.
You don't, there's no, you know, there's no accounting for that when you're doing experiments on climate.
But something that should be concerning to Republicans is the report also talks a little bit about the cost of these huge weather catastrophes we've been having. And apparently, floods and hurricanes and heat waves have cost the U.S. $1.1 trillion since 1980. And basically,
I can't believe that number is accurate. That seems
wildly low
to
but
me.
But it's also claiming that this is about to speed up. So, like, we're suddenly,
like,
in the last couple years, we've been having sort of like a hyperactive climate situation.
Yeah.
Well, that's about to become our norm.
Yeah.
So they're basically, you know, 1980 was just a time that we were just all hanging out in the weather.
Right.
But, you know, 2018 is going to be a time where there's like 800 hurricanes coming and hitting us.
Right, exactly.
Floods everywhere.
Yeah.
And so this number is about to skyrocket, basically.
Yikes. Guys, it's not good. But at least we got to see the report.
That's right.
Yeah. And now we can, like we always do, choose to do nothing with it.
Yeah. Every 4 years, we release a report that says climate change is real. And every 4 years, we do nothing about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's America. Right. meanwhile, the Trumps and the Bushes are sort of like involved in this very petty feud.
This is another good one here.
Oh, based on who, basically it's over who is the second worst president
right,
in history.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's going to be one of them.
Right.
And the loser in that competition is the worst,
is the
president,
worst president
in
history.
Yeah. So,
and I think we already know who the loser is.
Right.
But it's cute that they're trying.
Right, exactly. But this tax bill, though.
They're going to get this tax bill and everything will change.
Yeah, everything's going to be fine.
For everyone except people like you.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be great for them, and people like you, and I mean you, all of you, are not going to see any benefit at all.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, boy. But anyway, there's a new book coming out that is like from the Bush historian. It's called The Last Republican, by the way, which is like gross. Anyway.
Kill me.
But it has a quote from Bush, which is genius. This was before Trump even had the nomination. But he said, "I don't like him. I don't know much about him, but I know he's a blowhard. And I'm not too excited about him being a leader." And Bush also added that Trump appeared to be driven by a, quote, certain ego.
Certain ego.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. By the way, the elder Bush voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Yeah, we reported on that on the podcast. You remember?
Oh, no, because I'm pretending like I'm reporting on it right now.
W voted for nobody.
Yeah.
He voted none of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big scandal.
Amazing.
Back. This was a year ago, and so in thought time, that's like 800 years.
Yeah, it was
years.
Literally a year ago,
yeah.
By the way.
Literally.
Guys, we've only been through 1 year of this shit.
That's right.
So
this has been 1 year.
Upsetting.
Think about how many more years we're going to have to live through this.
Please, God, only be three or less.
I know, seriously.
Anyway,
Trump did have a good clapback.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good, actually. He didn't write it himself,
no,
obviously.
Of course not.
But he said, if one presidential candidate can disassemble a political party, it speaks volumes about how strong a legacy its past two presidents really had.
Fair
Which,
point.
Was a very fair point, yes.
Trump writer.
Right, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
That was not like the middle of the night tweet from Donald Trump.
No, he doesn't have good turns of phrase middle of the night. No. He's more of a ranter at that hour.
No.
Meanwhile, we had a very interesting thing happen this week that is not about politics, per se, but is about rich asshats. And so in that sense, it's about politics.
Right.
DNA Info and Gothamist just, like, closed overnight this week.
Yeah.
And the reason was because they're owned by a zillionaire.
Yeah.
And the
Ricketts. From the Ricketts
from
family.
The Ricketts
We've talked
family.
About the Ricketts family mm-hmm. on this podcast before.
And these were not super profitable sites. Although no. I believe that one of them was. I think it was.
Maybe.
I think DNA Info wasn't, but Gothamist was.
I was going to say, these are two. I did not know what DNA Info was.
I did.
I was going to say, being from New York, you probably have. But like Gothamist, I have heard of. So I have a feeling that
and
is
Gothamist
probably the one.
And LAist, there's a DCist. There's a ton of those websites that are all shuttered. But so in any case, last week, the workers voted to unionize.
Well,
and
I mean,
the owner just shut it down immediately.
Just go around unionizing.
No, it's crazy. He was like, this is not going to be profitable. Here's the thing. I just want to say something about unions before we move on. Unions want their members to have jobs. So it is not in the interest of a union to actually ask
to ruin
for more
the company that they're all
can
working
be,
for.
Than you can afford.
Right.
It is their job to advocate for the workers so that they have so that they are able to bargain for their rights and their compensation in a way that gives them the power to do so.
Right.
Because otherwise it's just individuals being exploited by rich people.
Right.
It is not the union's fault or the workers' fault that these companies were not profitable. This is something that if you are a businessman, you can decide or not decide to keep a company that's not profitable going for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
But to decide overnight that you're going to be a vindictive asshole and fire the 115 local journalists that were employed by you because they voted to unionize in one of the most exploitive fields in the country.
Yeah.
Then you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, DNA Info was doing really good work.
Well, that's the thing. And like, it's important for us to sort of like.
And Gothamist, too.
Yeah, it's important. Like, we should give you some context for these sites because, you know, first off, in places like New York, not only are community politics important because they play such a huge part in your actual daily life. And I would say in many places, local politics do. We talk about that a lot. But I
mean, we talked about that at the beginning of this podcast.
About it,
Vote for town council in Franklin, New York.
Exactly. But like specifically, I mean, like you and people are not necessarily actively engaged in these journalists are the people who go to those town council meetings.
Yes.
And there's a big issue
in a city like New York where our local papers cover national news.
Well, right. That's the thing. I mean, like,
I'm
thinking
not a
about
lot of hyper-local coverage.
Right. Like, I'm thinking about I grew up for a while in Keokuk, which was a small town. That they used to, while I lived there, which I realize I'm getting old at this point, but I mean, like, the paper used to come twice a day.
Yeah.
And it was basically just
local news. Yeah.
But you don't get that in New York other than from places like this, or if you're really digging for it, because the New York Times and, you know, they don't get that granular, and it's not their fault.
It's
not what they do.
No.
Right.
Well, and also there are so many layers of local in a city like New York and in a city like LA too. I mean, this is the case in LA as well. There is the layer of local that is city council elections.
Yeah.
But there is a more local layer in New York City that cannot be covered because there's 8 million people in a paper like The Times.
Right.
New York City used to have local papers. They all shuttered because they couldn't afford to stay afloat.
Well, right. That's the thing. So many papers.
DNA Info kind of came into that scene.
Yeah, they picked up the slack.
Picked up the slack in a lot of those situations. Right. And then with their loss, we kind of lose what was some of the only reporters who understood how to get this kind of information.
Right.
Because there have been important things uncovered as a result of these
papers. Yeah, both of these sites
DNA
have, like,
Info
had huge
used
sort
to
of,
break
like,
news. And Gothamist broke news all the time.
Yeah.
And they would often break news that was not considered sort of, like, legit enough to be in the New York Times. So it would be news that was a kind of local and a kind of scandal that was a little bit too sort of, like, scandalous for the Times.
Sure.
Gothamist kind of had a little bit of a sense of humor. I've been interviewed by DNA Info multiple times for my work on 9/11 health issues. DNA Info did a lot of work trying to help sort of spread information to, you know, what is a community that is essentially focused in Lower Manhattan about resources that were available to them, about, you know, other people that were experiencing what they were experiencing. Like, that, those sites were kind of like a useful way for New Yorkers to find out about hyperlocal politics.
Of course. Yeah. That's
so
depressing.
You know, you shouldn't let your super local papers just be run by assholes.
No,
I think that they should, that communities should operate papers on a co-op model, in like hyper local papers.
Yeah,
where I think that there should, that someone should, I mean, I haven't figured this out, obviously, but sure. I think that they're, that those are a public service and they are necessary, but they yeah. should not be in the hands of a billionaire. Because no. you just, first of all, in like with any situation, like with any of our local papers or national papers, you know, yeah. the, you can't necessarily trust that a paper is reporting straight news if there's no. an agenda on the line.
Well, of course, and we've talked about this a lot with, you know, look at who owns some of these huge papers. You exactly. know, we have Jeff Bezos owning huge papers yeah. now, and, well, he's, and you, he's basically like
and you see,
owning most of America at this
you
point.
You can but, I mean, see like, it with the can... LA Times is a great example, because the LA Times has changed its tone really dramatically in the last few years. In part, it keeps changing owners because no one, because it's not profitable, so no right. one can figure out what to do with it. But like the LA Times has been publishing like weird, really angry articles about the single payer healthcare bill. Oh, remember yeah. their coverage of that yes. was nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And I was like, who what? Are you hoping to serve with this paper? Right. This is not the voice of this community. It doesn't right. really do a service to this community, but it yeah. had an agenda.
Yeah.
But like, in any case, I think that especially in a city like New York, or even in a city like LA, especially yeah. like. That there should be a way for communities to operate papers as co-ops so that there is no, so that only people in the community have an incentive to, you know,
yeah.
get the news, like yeah. to sort of affect the news.
Yeah.
Like that there's no one from outside the community who can come in to affect it.
Yeah.
In any case, I haven't worked that out yet.
No, I like
it. But
it
seems
though.
Like a co-op model is the only Work thing that could save journalism right. to me, a yeah. person who knows yeah. nothing about journalism.
Well, sure.
In final news, there was finally a real Bowling Green massacre.
Yeah.
Finally got this one.
Yeah.
Because somebody broke into Rand Paul's house and yeah. broke five of his ribs.
Yeah. I don't know how to say
this last... It was a massacre of his ribs.
I don't know how to say this guy's last name, probably but I'm Boucher. Hoping it's Boucher, which would make his name Rene Boucher.
Yeah, it's got to be that, right?
Right.
It's Kentucky.
He probably has decided to say it like...
Boucher. Boucher. Boucher.
Right,
Boucher.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Actually, this is a state that pronounces Versailles. Versailles.
Yeah, I know.
So,
that's
like, what
saying.
Do they know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably Rene Boucher.
We're going to refer to him as Rene Boucher.
Obviously.
Right.
Both first
and last.
Man.
For the rest of the story, you're only going to hear first and last
Duh.
About Rene Boucher.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Rene Boucher lives in Rand Paul's gated community.
Sure.
He's a registered Democrat, but no one knows whether this attack was politically motivated. They just keep adding right. that to twist
yeah.
the knife a little.
Yeah.
He tackled him for unknown reasons.
Yeah. He broke five of his ribs.
He broke five of his ribs, though.
Yikes.
And also, Rene Boucher is a kind of eccentric character anyway.
I like this
He's
guy.
A doctor, but he's also an inventor. And more importantly, he's a QVC inventor.
Yes.
He created something called the Thermovest, which helps alleviate back pain.
Yeah.
That's from a 2005 article in the Bowling Green Daily News. And then sold it on QCV and appeared alongside it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would guess Rene Boucher is the kind of wacky person who sells his own device on QVC.
For sure. Like, yeah. Oh, he's a kook.
He's a kook.
He's just the type of kook that attacks Rand Paul in his own home.
I guarantee this was not politically motivated and was instead...
No, it's insanity motivated.
Insanity motivated.
Yeah.
This feels like a man who's capable of attacking Rand Paul. First of all,
yeah.
Rand Paul himself has a bit of crazy eye. So
obviously.
He probably looked at Rene Boucher
funny,
right?
That's what I was just about to say. Yeah.
And, you know... Right. What was Rene Boucher, TV inventor and doctor, supposed to do in that situation?
No, just tackle him.
Tackle yeah. him. It's Kentucky.
Oh, boy.
Tough it up.
Right.
In yeah. any case, that's the news. Sorry to the victims of the Bowling Green Massacre.
Yes.
Once again,
yeah.
you are missed. And we will talk to you next week when my very own mother
yes.
will be on the podcast to tell you all about the results of the town council
Harlan
elections
Nordstrom.
That we...
Always my favorite time, the podcast.
So we will talk to you then.
Yeah.
Bye.